Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I am joined today by another NCAA leader, the head football coach at Eastern New Mexico University, Coach Kelly Lee. Coach, it's great to have you here on the podcast.
Hey, Keith. So great to be here. Excited to talk a little football.
Coach, we certainly want to talk a little bit about your offense and the things you guys do. One of the tops in Division II. But before we go there, I want to talk a little bit about your background in coaching and specifically, you know, how you got into this profession and what it was for you that kind of cemented you as like, this is what I want to do as a career. This is what I want to do with my life. So going back to the beginning, tell us a little bit about how you got your start.
Well, I'm a son of a high school coach, so it started pretty early for me, going to two-a-days, playing on the bags, you know, watching the team practice, yeah. And then ball boy on the sidelines, then taking stats and doing all those things before I even really started playing in junior high. I think by the time I got to high school, I kind of knew that this was ingrained in me. It's what I wanted to do. I saw the impact that my father was able to have on so many young men, and I knew that that was a direction that would be a rewarding life, and I love the game of football, so it was a natural fit for me. So I kind of felt it was my calling pretty early on.
Yeah, Coach, I had a similar background. My father was a high school football coach as well, and I know for me it was the same thing, man, going to the two-a-days, being there all the time. My mom, what a great job. I think we lived at the time about 45 minutes from where my dad coached, and she'd bring me out there every day. And for me, it was all about being old enough to stand on the sideline during games, and I think it was finally 8 years old when my dad allowed me and figured I knew enough how to get out of the way of a play coming towards the sideline.
Yeah, that's exciting, that first time you get on the sideline during a game and watch it. And I remember I was lucky. I was a short bike ride from the high school, so I mean, I was living there. It was nice.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Coach, obviously all that had an impact on you. And as you got into it, you made that transition from player to coach. What were some of the key lessons that you learned, you know, in your early days as a coach that really have become part of what you're doing today?
Well, to really believe in something, you know, to have a platform with all phases of coaching, you know, how you're going to handle players, what your discipline is, you know, and then as you moved up and became from a position coach to coordinator, what was your scheme, what was your philosophy, and trying to find something that was unique to what you believed in and match that with your personality. And the same thing being a head coach, you know, not trying to be someone else, be who you are. You know, there's only one Nick Saban, there's only one Urban Meyer. They're who they are, and you need to find out who you are and how you're going to coach and relate to your staff and your players and make an enjoyable experience to get the most, you know, out of your players on and off the field.
Coach, not everybody has that kind of experience that you and I kind of growing up with the game. What advice do you give to a young coach who maybe didn't have that experience but wants to make it in this profession long term?
Yeah, I think, you know, I learned a lot by just being around, you know, so, you know, that was a luxury I had. So I would say young coaches, you know, be in the office, be around, get in the hip pocket of that coordinator, that head coach. A lot of times coaches will delegate to guys that are there, you know what I mean? And if you're there, you're going to get more stuff on your plate, and maybe it's stuff that's not has to do with X's and O's, but those are valuable, valuable things. And when the coach gives you something, do it to the best of your ability, whether it's cleaning out the equipment room and getting it organized and inventoried, or researching, you know, the new scheme fad, whatever it is, do it to the best of your ability and take all those opportunities to learn.
Coach, when you look at your program, you know, all the part of it outside the X's and O's, the culture, the leadership, all those things, what are the important things? What's a big part of your philosophy and how that develops?
Well, we want our players to be well-rounded. You know, we've talked to them about being the best football player that they can be. And you know, that's through the off season and making sure everything counts through the agilities and all that. But then we take the same approach in the classroom. We want them to graduate and not just graduate, but if they can be an honor student, they need to be an honor student. You know, if they're a 2.5 student, but they could be a 3.0 student, then they need to get there. And I think those are just areas where kind of like laboratories, so that they can take that knowledge out into the life and use it when they get a job and in the rest of their life. You know, if you're being successful in the athletic realm, you're being successful in the classroom, you've acquired skills, they're going to make you successful out in the real world.
Absolutely. And obviously, ball in someday for those guys who are moving on to
Absolutely.
Other professions. So we have to get them ready. And obviously, I think a lot of guys are in the game for exactly that, that, you know, you're preparing these guys for life. And there are all those great lessons we have within the game that are taught along the way. But teaching is a big part of this profession, whether it's building character or putting a very quality product out on the field. And when we look at in those terms, Coach, and in the actual teaching time you get to teach this game, what are some of the best things that you and your coaching staff are doing to maximize the time you're given, you know, your 20 hours of contact time a week?
Sure. I think you got to realize that people learn in different ways. And so you got to present material in multiple ways. You know, obviously you're going to get up on the board, you're going to draw it up, you're going to walk through, you know, you're going to watch film, and then you're going to get out on the field and practice it. And you want to give them all those domains, because some people are going to get a lot from the X and O on the board. Others are going to get a lot more out of that walkthrough. But your job is to make sure everybody gets the material. And, you know, we talk about it's not what we know as coaches. You could be the smartest coach and know the most scheme and know the most technique, but it's what you can get your players to know. So, you know, I think when I look at coaches, good coaches are the ones that their players know what they know, and they're able to facilitate that information. And our key is to try to do it in as many different ways. And the way kids' learning is changing with technology, you know, and I think the more you can incorporate that, and we spend a lot more time watching film and breaking down and teaching with those avenues, with cut-ups and presentations. We always have insertion presentations where a kid can read their assignment, and then they go right to the play and they see examples of some good ways to do it, maybe a couple examples of someone not doing it well, the technique, their assignment, because, you know, that's what our kids are doing day to day. You know, they're on their phones, they're very savvy with that, and I think a lot of kids are going to relate that. But we also want to expose them to all the different learning domains.
Yeah, and to follow up with that, how do you get them? Obviously, video is a big part of it today. For you and I, maybe, you know, before this wave of technology hit, it was a little bit more on the board, chalk talks, et cetera. Yeah, how do you maximize all those different learning styles?
Well, you know, we just do what Coach has been doing forever. You know, you cut up things and you're preparing for games. But we make sure we get all those to our kids, too. You know, and we use Huddle at our level, and then, you know, we make sure when we cut everything up, that's available to them so they can get on there, whether it's a defensive player, and look at the other team's plays out of trips, out of twins, out of 30 personnel, 11 personnel, whatever it is. You know, we break those things down to them. And basically, we have the ability now to give our players everything that we've been doing as coaches for a long time, when that might not have been as feasible back in the day. And so, and then we try to instill on them that if they're prepared, they're going to play faster and they're going to play better. And if they don't have to think a lot on game day because they really know the opponent, they know their assignment, they're going to have more fun because they're going to be out there playing the game they love. So I've always kind of approached it that kind of practices for coaches. I love practice. I love script and practice. I love coaching drills. But we want to do a good enough job during practice that when it comes game time, our players can go out there and have fun and enjoy the game of football and fly around and play fast.
Because before we get into the specifics of your offense, I want to touch on something you mentioned there, the scripting of practice. You know, with the time you have, and obviously you got to be efficient with your reps. So first of all, looking at your game plan, you know, what for you is the optimal amount of calls that you can put into a game plan that then you can also make sure that you script and get enough repetitions during the course of the week?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I will say this, for us it kind of varies from year to year, based on probably a lot of it has to do with your quarterback, and then just the maturity of you on an offense, you know, where you're at. And there's years that we'll go into a game carrying more, and if we're a little younger, we're going to shrink that. But we, being a triple option team, we do a lot of our game planning in the summer, because, you know, watching other people's films doesn't always give much of an indication how they're going to play us. We do that to scout personnel and things. So we'll come up and we'll dream, and our coaching staff will get involved, and we'll have this list of 2 pages of things we could do that we think are really good. But then we come in that day, and Sunday, and we watch our opponent, we watch the personnel, and then our goal is to shrink that 2 pages to about a half a page of stuff that, one, we can practice and make sure that our kids know in and out, that we feel comfortable we'll be able to go out and execute. for us, we're a triple option team, so we have our base plays and our counters and stuff that come off of that. We never have a big load of offensive plays. Sometimes we have a big load of tags or variations to those schemes, and we have to reduce that. And I would say we go into a game with 8 to 10 things we're going to do in the run game and probably another 7 or 8 things we're going to do in the pass game. And if we get much more than that, sometimes you worry about how well you're going to be able to practice it all.
Absolutely, Coach. And taking a look at how you prepare for opponent, and I think at the college level, you might get maybe a little bit more of what you expect based on some of the things you're seeing on film and what a defense bases out of. But I know a lot of the high school coaches I talk to who run the triple option talk about junk defenses and getting something that they've never seen before. How do you prepare for those types of things? Maybe those things that show up, you know, immediately on the field during a game and say, man, we didn't look at this at all.
That's a great question. For us, we're basically going to classify all defenses into 4 fronts with our schemes. You know, they're either going to be a 3-4, 5-2 Okie type look. They're going to be a 4-3 or a 6-1, and we package that together. Some kind of 4-4-2-5, which we'll call a split, any kind of split back or 8-man front. And then you can get the bear mic type stuff that we basically call an old 7 diamond, because when you play us, even those overhang guys are going to have to be responsible in the run. So we kind of classify it in those 4 areas, and we make sure that we get a little bit of work against all of those every week. And we do that with like our half lines, where we're going to go out and work our base plays, and we're going to run through them, and we're going to get a look with those base plays against all 4 of those looks, you know, every week. So that when a team comes out and we spent the majority of our time preparing on one thing and we get another thing, we're ready to run it, because we've got a few reps that week, but we've also got a few reps every week at it. So it's not a surprise. Maybe it's not what we spent the most of our time on, but we spend a little bit of time on it every week, so we feel like our kids can execute and be ready to make the adjustments that we need to be successful.
I know if there's one thing that gets a defensive coordinator concerned is the triple option offense. It was an offense back when my dad was coaching high school ball. They ran the triple. I think I had some exposure to it and coached in it just a couple years early on in my high school career. You know, obviously there's a lot of good things we can learn from what you guys do in the triple option, even if we're not running it. What would you say, you know, for that coach who's out there, who maybe you can't dabble in the triple option? I mean, you got to be committed to it. But what would a coach in studying how you do things, not necessarily we're going to run these schemes, but kind of the methodology and strategy behind it, what could they take away from learning an offense like yours and examining some of the things you do as a coach?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I was having a conversation with a couple of my coaches, and we really feel like one of the things that people could get from us is just the way that we practice, the amount of reps that we get, and the way we're able to break things up in pods, the way we're able to break things up in half line. And that kind of developed out of necessity with a lot of option people, because we never knew what we were going to see. But in turn, we've learned how to get a lot of reps and really focus in on ourselves and being able to be the best and troubleshoot and quality control with what we're doing. And our conversation the other day was that, you know, the air raid kind of thing has really evolved, where a lot of teams aren't really the old air raid or Tony Franklin system that you hear so much about. They've morphed into something different, but what's consistent is that methodology of practicing. And I think we're similar with the triple option. It goes all the way back to the West Coast offense days, when that was the fad, and people morphed that into something different. And the West Coast offense became not necessarily the same formations, maybe the same plays that the 49ers were running, but it became a philosophy, a way you practice, an approach. And I think there's aspects of that in what we do with the way we practice, prepare for things, tempo, that can go a long ways in a lot of different schemes as well.
Definitely. And I think if you study this game at all, in fact, I'm sitting right in front of me on my bookshelf, and I just pulled it off of there. I got this book called The Delaware Wing Tee, An Order of Football by Tubby Raymond and Ted Kemsky.
I've got that book on my shelf too.
And, you know, what I learned from that book, and I was a wing tee coach, you know, for a part of my career, but what I really did learn from that was the methodology. I think that's something that stayed with me throughout my career as our offense evolved, and you know, we adopted the no huddle, we adopted tempo procedures, we adopted RPO, that there was still a methodology in how you practice. And I would agree. I think what the triple option teams do very well is the preparation. And I think you would agree there's a simplicity to it, which allows you to be very good at the fundamentals of it as well.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in offensive football, in having an offense. I think today we've gotten away sometimes where we've gotten caught up in a lot of other things where people are running plays and maybe running plays out of a bunch of formations, but do they fit with each other? And whatever you're going to do, you need to have your base plays, and then from there you need to be able to, how are we going to take advantage of what the defense does to stop those with our counters, whether it be a true counter or a counter of a play action or whatever that may be. You know, when you're building an offense, when you're putting an offense together, and that was one of the great things about the Wing T, is it was built in, you know, and people did this, the Wing T guys do this. And the same thing we do with the triple option. It's the same thing the Air Raids do with their, you know, they may have their cover two beaters or their man three beaters, or they have their plays that they can run against anything, and the quarterback knows where to go to the ball depending on the coverage. But those things are offenses, and they're built on each other, and they're plays that build off of each other. And that's one thing I tell my assistants. I'll look at new plays. It better help us run our base plays. That's the idea of complementary plays. They make you help you run your best plays or take advantage of the way someone's defending your base play. If it's just a great play that you saw in a bowl game and it doesn't do that for our offense, it's not something we need to adopt. And I think that's important for coaches as they're, especially when they're becoming their coordinators for the first time and looking what they're going to do. You know, there's a lot of great plays out there that may not be the right plays for you and your system and your kids, and having an offense and a, like you say, a methodology to practice it and know how to call the game. That goes a long ways to being successful.
Yeah. For me, I think back to my early days of learning, you know, up tempo. And I heard a coach talk about their philosophy being, we're just going to run as many plays as we can, as fast as we can in the course of the game. You know, it was a time where maybe people were hitting around 60 plays a game. And it really, I had a hard time thinking of that. And he equated it to, and he made the analogy that it's just like, you know, hey, you got a 3-point shooter, you just keep feeding them. Eventually something's going to hit. And I guess maybe it was my background in learning a little bit of the triple and learning coming up through a Wing T system where there was, you know, as Coach Raymond liked to call it, an order of football, that a system has answers. You know, I think that's the biggest thing that makes a system. I think a lot of guys out there say, oh, they have a system. But more than anybody, the triple option guys know that when something breaks down, here's the answer to fix it. I mean, you guys know, I think, to a T, like, where do you go next? When they do something, what's your answer?
Yeah, and it gives your kids a chance. You know, someone can, I mean, and people, we play people, they come up with great schemes to stop us, but we've seen it before, you know what I mean? We can draw back to past experiences. Our kids can, and give us a chance. You know, I can't remember calling this offense. I think the last time we were shut out, I think might have been 2001. I was coaching high school ball, and I remember playing a really, really good team, and I think we lost 21-0. It's just, I see people get shut out, and to me, I think if you got shut out, you didn't have an answer built in. And then you need to look at what it was and what your answer going to be, because you have enough practice. You should be able to move the ball. You should be able to find a way to get some points. Now, it might be enough points to win the game. It might be enough points that you wanted. Well, look back. But if you have an offense, there should be an answer in there somewhere, and you should be able to generate some kind of offense. And I think by running a true offense, whether it's the Air Raid, the West Coast, the, you know, Wing T, or the Flex Bone, that gives you the ability to do those things and make those adjustments.
Coach, you know, you guys led Division II in rushing at 352 yards per game, which is very impressive. You also led Division II in time of possession. So I think the one thing, if I were to look at, I guess, that caused issues for coaching staffs when tempo became the trend, was not just time of possession, but coordinating a game plan in the aspect of making sure that everything you do, both on the offensive side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball, and in special team, kind of works together and in unison and complements each other. So whether it's the triple or the spread offense, hurry up, no huddle, whatever it might be, how important as a head coach is it to make sure that you guys have not just an offensive game plan, defensive game plan, and special teams game plan, but those things are coordinated together?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think whether it's a head coach calling it or a head coach with two coordinators, I think the coach needs to be kind of the facilitator of that. Make sure that those coordinators know what each other's game plans are going in and do they match. You need to find out early in the week, are they matching? Maybe the offense in our situations needs to really control the ball. Give the defense a chance to rest so that when they're fresh out there, your D-line can get a pass rush. You know what I mean? Maybe it's going to be a game where, you know, the defense is not necessarily going to try to stop the offense, stuff them in the middle of the field, but are going to make their stops in the green zone when their passing windows are shorter. You know, maybe they're going to take some chances with blitzes and stuff, try to generate a big play, and then really try to hunker down. And you got to understand, how does that affect your offense and how does that affect your special teams? And all those things have to be in unison. And I think that goes to good communication and sometimes putting ego aside and not worrying about the stats or the numbers, or maybe you've got to run fewer plays this week, and maybe you're going to have a little less offense because you're going to run fewer plays, you know. And maybe that's a defensively you're going to give up a few more yards because you're going to make your stand in the red zone, you know what I mean, and those things. But I think once you get everyone on the same page, and then I think you sell that plan to your kids. Your kids need to understand what your plan is. And you get the buy-in from them, and then you have everyone rowing in the same direction. And I think that's really important. And as you said, especially today with the different tempos in football and that being such a prevalent part of the game.
Yeah, and I think if you take a look, I think another great example of that is Kevin Kelly at Pulaski Academy in Arkansas, who's won, I think, like six state championships now, never punts.
Right.
You know, goes for two every extra point, onside kicks most of the time. When you talk to Kevin Kelly, his philosophy that he wants out of his defense is they are not going to be a bend but don't break defense. That they're going to be out there, they're going to take chances, and they're going to get off the field quickly one way or the other, because he believes, like, I'm going to outscore you with my offense. I just know we can do it better. We can score more points, but I can't do it if they're sitting on the sideline. And so many times, I think, again, whether it's ego, whether it's guys looking at stats, I think certainly at the college level where guys are making a living based on that, they don't have the teaching job to back them up, that they do worry about those things, that, man, I don't want to be a defense that looks like that. But at the end of the day, that might be what you need from your defense.
Yeah. I think that sometimes you would wonder if college football games might not get called a little differently if no one kept stats.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a shame, because you think the ultimate idea should be winning. And I know for us, you could see in our stats something was a little different this year. We've traditionally been a triple option team that throws the ball really well. And in the past years, the last few years, we've been in a lot of shootout games. Mm-hmm. Now, our defense was really good this year, and we started fast. So it just worked out. A lot of times this year, we got up 17-0, 21-0 early. Well, we have the ability in the triple option to really, at that point, take the air out of the ball, shorten the game, and why wouldn't you want to do that? You have a lead, and we can shink the possessions. We've got the lead. We can pound the ball. So our passing numbers were way down on the board, but then when I look at our cut-ups, I look like we threw the ball as well as we ever did. We just didn't throw it as much because we, fortunately, were playing with a lead and an early lead a lot more than we may have had in the past. So, you know, a lot of times those numbers can be skewed, and they're, we all look at them, and we want to, you know, they're great for us, they're great for recruiting and things, but a lot of times I wonder, how would the game be different if there weren't any stats? Because that's the ultimate objective, is to win the game, and I think those teams that get by with that and get everyone on the same page and really focus on those things, those programs have a really good chance to be successful.
Yeah, and you brought up that idea of getting ahead of the game, and obviously an offense like yours, which, you know, again, you guys led time of possession, you led with the ground game. I guess maybe a criticism you hear is that if a team like yours gets down, it's hard for them to get back in the game. I certainly don't think that triple option coaches just think, oh, you know, well, we're going to get up and take the lead, or if we get down, we're out of this game. Well, how do you address those situations, and what is the, I guess, not change in philosophy, but maybe change in strategy at that point if you have to dig out from a hole?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that's helped us is when we moved to no huddle. You know, and we're not a no huddle tempo team. We like to go at a decent rate. We're not one of those teams that, unless it's in the fourth quarter and we're trying, they're going to run the clock down to one. We actually started leading the nation regular with time of possession when we went to no huddle, because we were able to get the defense tired or more, we made more first downs, we kept the ball longer. So by not trying to really slow down the game, we ended up getting better time of possession, one of those funny things that works out. But I think the ability to have that, and when you live in the no huddle all the time, when you do need to pick up your pace, your kids are comfortable doing it because you're doing the same thing you do every day, but you're just doing it faster. So I think that's been important for us. And then the other thing is selling our kids that, you know, we're not going to lose faith. We're not going to abandon what we do. We know that our style of play really grinds people down in the fourth quarter, and traditionally things get a lot easier for us towards the late third and the fourth quarter. So we know that if we need to score some points in the fourth, we have. You know, we've been fortunate enough. We've been down 28-0 at half, come back one 29-28 in the lot recent years, and we were done in our rival game with West Texas A&M three times in recent memory, 35-14, 28-7, and come back and won. And so I think that sometimes that can be a little bit of a myth. The one time that it can become true is, and it hurts you, is when the other team's offense is really, really explosive mm-hmm. and really, really good. Because if you're down and you get in a deal where you might be trading scores and it's very hard to stop them, the way it gets to a point where the time that you take off to score is working against you, you know, and that's at the point where now you might have to take a chance, whether it be the onside kick or, you know, going for it, you know, because the number of possessions by the nature of what you do is going to get limited. And it becomes where you have to play perfect, because you might, if you're down 14, there might be three possessions left to win the game. You're going to have to score touchdowns on all three. You're going to have to get three stops, you know, and those things. So, but to answer your question, I think the ability to go to no huddle and so that you can speed up the way you do it has been big for us.
Yeah, in the no huddle, I've always looked at it as it doesn't necessarily become a system. It becomes a procedure that you use within your system,
yeah.
Like any tool in any offense. And obviously, Coach, one of the big tools out there right now in trends is the RPO. Have you guys implemented any of that into your offense?
You know, we have an RPO that we've been running from the days of option football forever. A simple one where we go down the line with double option and we're blocking the end and we're pitching off the outside backer, and at the same time the wide receiver's running a slant. And our quarterback, if the linebacker comes up, he throws the slant. If not, he goes back and he'll go ahead and pitch off that outside backer and run the option. So that's something that we've been doing for 20 years, you know, and a lot of option people. It goes back to the days of split back veer. I mean, they were doing that thing a long time ago. Other than that, we do get in the gun a little bit and run some zone read triple, I would say probably 20% of the time. Mm-hmm. So off of that, we have some RPOs built in, basically just the bubble with the inside zone type stuff. We're not in the gun enough to be running power and throwing it over the head of the linebacker and some of that really explosive stuff the true RPO teams are doing. But I think, you know, for us, it's a good fit. I mean, a lot of RPOs are basically double or triple options, which is the way we conduct business anyway. So definitely similar philosophy, so it's become kind of a natural fit. And one of the reasons we do it at the college level, too, is that's what our defense has to defend. So at the college level, we're going to go against each other in spring ball and in fall camp. So if we can run some of those things and be effective at running them, you know, we can give them some conventional looks, and they can get some looks at some things that they're going to see and defend during the year, and not just always defending the triple option.
Well, Coach, with, you know, looking at the RPO and how you practice it, you guys obviously understand how to practice triple and the importance of mesh and all those things. What can coaches out there who run RPO learn from how you guys practice it?
I think just to get all the looks. You know, it's the same thing. You got to find ways that you're going to get enough reps, that you're going to get the give, the pull, the throw. Anytime you do that, the defense has their variation, so you got to get those looks versus everything you're going to see. So I would think it'd be a very similar process where RPO teams need to be working against everything, because as people are clinicking, you know, those DCs are smart and they're getting together and they're coming up with eyes. You're going to start seeing some gimmicks, some junk type things with the RPO stuff too. You know, so the more that they can practice against everything and be ready for something new, the better off they're going to be.
Now, what's your preference for practicing those over? Obviously, you're going to run some in team. What other phases do those make their way into practice as far as drills or pods, or how are you going to work those things?
Yeah, we're going to pod. We're going to pod basically every single one of our major runs, which would be, so we're going to have a midline pod one day during the week. We're going to have a triple option pod one day, and it might be even two if we're veering and looping our tackle doing stuff. We're going to have our zone option pod. We're going to have our belly play pod where we're just going to run our belly for five minutes. Normally we can get 30 to 35 reps in 5 minutes. We're going to line up against everything we could see and get those reps. And then that really checks off your list. You know, when you get to your team and what you need to run, belly something you need to run there? Probably not, unless you're going to run it out of some exotic formation or something you need to work there. And same thing, we do our half lines where we get all our doubles and triple options worked. So, you know, when we're able to get into our team, we're really working at maybe our zone read stuff, which is all line action and things like that. So we'll take in some, there's certain plays that sometimes the only time we practice them during the week are in our pods.
And coach, just to maybe for those coaches out there who aren't familiar with pods, explain the setup a little bit for us.
Yeah, like if we were working our midline pod, we'd have the center and two guards and our fullback in a slot, and we'd be blocking basically, if it was an even front, two down linemen, probably two split backers and a free safety. And, you know, we'd work with a 31 front, a 22 front, and, you know, an 11 front. You know, then we'd work with twos and those guys slanting either way. And then we'd work with a three in the shade and those guys slanting either way. And we'd work blitzes and all that stuff. So that we're just running our midline play over and over and over and getting every look. And then when we would move to the belly, it's basically would be like a half line. So we'd have our center guard tackle a slot with our fullback, and some we'd run with a tight end, some we'd not, and we're going to put a half line of a defense up there and just rep the heck out of it against everything we could see. For instance, we do one with our, we have an inside counter, which is just counter tray blockings. We'll set our slot in there, and our quarterback could give it to a slot, and we won't have the play side lineman. We'll just pull our guard and tackle, and they're working on blocking their two guys, whether it's the guard kicking out and the tackle folding up under the backer, or the guy squeezing, now the tackle's got to log him, and the guard's going to wrap, and then the running back's reading whether he's going to duck up underneath and duck outside. So sometimes our pod is even the backside lineman getting their reps, but 5 minutes of that, you know, make sure our meshes are clean with our running backs. Our running backs are getting reps at reading their blocks, and our guard and tackle are getting all the pulls they need in 5 minutes for the whole week.
Coach, you said you get about 30 to 35 plays in that five-minute period. How are you able to move that fast? What's key to the setup and making sure you guys are moving through that quickly?
Well, we're repping everyone. So as soon as like, if we're doing a half line, guard, tackle, tight end, go, the next three are sprinting up and running the play. We'll usually keep our center there for four or five plays in a row, and then they'll rotate. Same thing, if we have three or four fullbacks, they're all repping, all our quarterbacks are repping. So we basically, as soon as the plays run, while we're teaching it, I'll start counting down 5, 4, 3. And if we don't run that next play, when we hit one, then we'll probably do some up-downs and stuff till we learn the tempo. And a lot of times our guys know the tempo. It's our scout guys got to learn that they got to get back too. Mm-hmm. So if we're working a split backer work, we probably got four backers over there. Two are taking a rep, the next two are stepping up, taking the next rep. And we're getting it and getting as many reps as we can. And we're not coaching a lot there. You know, we're coaching on the fly, and we're going to film that, and then we're going to coach off that film.
Coach, I really appreciate the ideas you shared with us here today. A lot of great offensive football. I love, you know, those topics we got into. But as you look at everything you do within your program, what would be the one thing you point to that gives your team the winning edge?
Well, I think you got to get ownership in your team. And we stress accountability and those things. But once your players have ownership and it becomes their program, and they become saying the things, and they might not say them the same way you say them, but they're getting the point across, then you know that you're going to be successful. And so I think that's a big part of our success. Our players own our offense. They own our defense. They own our team philosophy. They hold each other accountable on and off the field in the classroom. And it's a culture, and it takes time to cultivate that culture. And you can never get complacent thinking you have it made, because it only takes a few different leaders or things pulling to start deteriorating it. But I think once you have it, it's much easier, and your players do that. And I think it all comes back to those players buying in and having ownership in what you're doing.
Coach, appreciate all you do out there and what you're doing to be a leader in this game. How can our listeners connect with you?
Good ways, Twitter, at Coach Lee, Coach Kelly Lee. Also, my email is Kelly.Lee at Eastern. ENMU.edu, KELLEY dot LEE at ENMU.edu. And I like talking football, specifically scheme stuff. You know, as you move to head coach, you get farther and far away from that. So, you know, I'm not always the fastest at getting reply, but I make sure I always get replies. I'll get back to you, and the summer's a great time to hit me up with scheme, because that's a great time I'm sitting around talking. If anyone wants to come and visit us, you know, we have an open-door policy. Come down, watch spring practice, or talk to any of our coaches. Just get a hold of us and let us know, and we'd love to have you.
Coach, thanks again, and best of luck to you guys in 2018.
Thank you. I appreciate all USA Football does.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.